Coming up next on Tech News Today, NAB announcements galore, announcements from Sling, DJI, and Google. Also, Lyrebird will make sure that you distrust everything that you hear. Unroll.me is super sorry that you were upset that they sold you out. And flying cars aren't far off from jet skis, really, when you think about it. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1753, recorded Monday, April 24th, 2017. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Box.com, bringing people and ideas together so businesses can work as one. 71,000 companies, including the majority of the Fortune 500, are already on Box for a free two-week trial. And to find out more, visit Box.com.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we tell you everything you need to know about technology and why it matters. I'm Megan Maroney, and welcome back!
Hey! How's it going?
We missed you.
Well, missed you guys, too. I mean, I was in wine country having a really great time, but I also missed you.
I don't think you did. You can tell the truth. It's okay. You can be glad to be back and also have had a pleasant vacation without us.
Both of the things that you just said, and shall I also say, I got back and check out what was waiting for me on the desk, a Samsung Galaxy S8 Plus.
Mm-hmm.
It's tall. It's slender.
Just
and
like
it's
you.
Brand new, and I'm deathly afraid to drop it.
Yeah.
Just like me, I'm deathly afraid of dropping myself.
Yeah. How does it, as they say, feel in the hands?
Hand feel is nice.
Hand feel. The worst.
Yeah, this is terminology that needs to go away for good.
Okay. But you haven't really played with it yet.
No,
okay.
I literally just set it up and moved over some files and installed some things. And like I said, every time I set it on the table, I have to set it down gently because I'm afraid I'm going to scratch it or break it or both because I know me too well.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do to phones. Yes, exactly, Brian. Brian knows me too well as
well.
Did
you order a case?
No, I didn't. Florence Ion, All About Android, said that she has one that she's going to bring to me, but she's not on this week. So all I have to do is make it to next week. If I can make it to next week, and that is actually asking a lot, personally. I don't know how comfortable I feel with that, but I'm going to give myself...
Wrap it in paper towels or something?
Oh, nothing says beautiful with the Samsung Galaxy S8 Plus than wrapping it in paper towels,
yeah.
I can tell you. It's a really great idea. Let's talk about some tech news. Sling Media is adding to its Sling arsenal with a new piece of video production hardware called Sling Studio. It's aimed at video producers who are looking to spruce up their Facebook Live and YouTube Live streams. The Sling Studio Hub can accept up to 10 video feeds from wired as well as wireless cameras and smartphones. Those are then fed into the software interface that you would have if you were a producer running on an iPad. That enables an operator to live switch between those feeds as well as playback pre-recorded video. The kit and accessories will hit shelves sometime in May, the main kit costing $999. So it's kind of like the TriCaster, but smaller, mm-hmm. less expensive.
The TriCaster, of course, is the thing that we use to switch.
Yes.
I don't really know how. You used to do that job.
Yeah.
I've never done that job, so it's magic to me.
Mm-hmm.
But this was announced at NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters Convention, which makes me sad that we're not there because we were there last year and got to hear these kinds of announcements.
Yeah.
So Sling. Now, is Sling Media, I'm always confused. Sling, is that the same thing as like the Sling Cloud?
Sling Box, Sling TV.
Okay, they're all one thing.
They're all one thing. Sling definitely has been a consumer brand and is a consumer brand. This seems to be their first kind of foray into, you know, outside of that box, outside of being more consumer focused and more towards, I don't know, people who are looking to produce video in this way. But I think it's, I love where we're at with creative production in a number of different ways, both music, both video. All this stuff is being democratized and the cost is getting lower and lower to get in through the door. Brian is our technical director here for TNT and he's using the TriCaster right now.
Yeah.
Do you think that this could achieve what you do on the TriCaster? I'm guessing, maybe not.
But. Probably not. Not with the level of sophistication that we have for switching over here. But, yeah. I mean, for a live situation, it'd be pretty cool. But there is a product that me and Padre reviewed, something called the Screens. That was a Kickstarter.
Oh, right.
That is kind of similar, like a $400 TriCaster option. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's pretty cool anyways.
More and more options, right? Like, I remember 5-10 years ago, there were a couple of, like, software-only options that if you didn't want to go the hardware route, you could do it like Wirecast, for example, which Wirecast is still around. You can do it in software. There's more of these kind of hardware-specific solutions coming out. And I don't know. This seems I would definitely love to play around with it. It seems like a really kind of like a modular approach. You can get accessories like a battery for the hub for $149. You can get Camera Link, which turns an HDMI output into a wireless camera to be fed into it. And it just seems like the control panel on the iPad looks kind of slick.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool stuff.
Well, thanks to viewer Jerome, who sent us this next story with the subject line, "No more need for live podcasters." So it looks like robots are taking our jobs. Jerome pointed to this PC Magazine piece on Lyrebird, software that claims to be able to recreate anyone's voice with just 1 minute of audio tape. You can also design your own voice. And Lyrebird's GPU clusters generate 1,000 sentences in less than half a second for real-time voice generation. You can also synthesize the emotion to create a voice that sounds angry or stressed or even sympathetic. So if you have a hard time showing compassion towards someone and you want to fake it, this is software just for you. Lyrebird addresses the ethical issues the software brings up and says that by releasing the technology publicly and making it available to anyone, they hope to mitigate risks the software creates. So we should listen to some. They have Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama. I don't know if.
Of course, they went the political route with all these examples.
On the first link,
I'm not a robot. My intonation is always different. I am not a robot. My intonation is always different. I'm not a robot. My intonation is always different. I am not a robot. My intonation is always different.
So
I'm not a robot.
Sounds definitely, like Donald Trump.
Definitely different. Sounds robotic. It's got a little bit of that kind of like glassy quality to it that voice synthesis mm-hmm. seems to have. But yeah, there's a lot of really identifiable characteristics. Like, it's certainly not at spitting image territory quite mm-hmm. yet. But if they're there now, mm-hmm. this is really going to be something crazy. I imagine it's not going to take very long to get to a point where it's going to be pretty darn believable.
Well,
yeah,
my intonation is always different.
Who's that?
Obama.
Obama here.
I'm not a robot. My intonation is always different. I'm not a robot. My intonation is always different.
You know what it sounds like? It sounds like they're eating like marshmallows or something and trying to talk.
Sounds like they've been drinking heavily.
Yeah. There were longer form examples. I think if you go to the article, the PC Mag article, there's okay. one there where they're just talking. Go to the second one on the page. That gives you more of a sense of like sentence, you know, longer sentences and kind of, I don't know, man.
This one?
Yeah, try that one. Let's hear that one.
You heard about this new technology.
Are you speaking about this new algorithm to copy voices?
Yes, it is developed by a startup called Lyrebird.
This is huge. They can make us say anything now, really anything.
The good news is that they will offer the technology to anyone.
This is huge.
All right, I can't do this anymore. It's making my brain hurt. I'm fascinated by this. I'm also frightened of it.
Right.
For the potential of what can be done when you can impersonate a voice and have it not be... not be able to tell the difference between the real thing.
Right. And Lyrebird says, you know, well, then these shouldn't be used as evidence, you know, so I don't know what their point is exactly. Like, we shouldn't be able to, like, listen to our president speak and be able to trust what he says.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, right. Like they say, OK, so we realize that this will, you know, create distrust in anything you ever hear anymore. So what we've decided to do is put it out for everyone to have access to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I read that. I was like, well, that doesn't make any sense because now. But their point being that
trust no one.
At least that way. You know that it can be done, which further goes down that weird rabbit hole of equals don't ever trust anything you hear anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really scary world. However, thought experiment, I was trying to think of this. How does this differ from Photoshop? Because Photoshop can do some really amazing things with pictures, and it can create scenes that look 100% believable, but yet it hasn't had this kind of impact. Like, There hasn't been a picture that I'm trying to think of any examples off the top of my head, like in a political realm of someone in a place that they weren't actually, but the photo was so real that nobody trusted that the picture wasn't real. You know what I mean? But that's what they're saying, what I would imagine could happen here, that you hear someone saying something that they never actually said, but there's no way to prove that they did or they didn't. Why is it different between visual and audio?
Well, can't you always prove a photo is photoshopped? Like, just with the element, looking at the elements of the photos, you could see that there's layers there.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, I guess the right trained eye. Yeah, like, this is obviously not real.
Oh, come on, it's okay.
This is I definitely did not have my shirt off next to a swimming pool,
okay.
Brian. Wrong show, sure. Brian.
Oh, right. He swims with a shirt on always.
Yes, I don't know. I think there's a lot of potential for crazy, weird,
yeah,
bad things. But
well,
maybe that's just my fear of technology. I don't know.
I think that audio and video that is edited in a certain way can already prove that, you know, can also already be false. Like,
yeah,
we're, you know, we think, no, oh, live streaming. And it's true that live streaming is great and has brought our attention to things that we previously would not have been able to see. But you don't know what happened right before and you don't know what happened right after. So it's not the full story. Audio, I'm thinking in particular, there was some audio tape of Hillary Clinton like in the 70s, and it was edited in a way to make her look like she was laughing at,
right,
you know, a rape victim, when in actuality she was laughing at the legal system and how it worked. I think that we're already way beyond you know, being able to edit just people's video or audio to make it tell a story that we want it to tell. Yeah, it's interesting that they say, like, yeah, basically they are saying what you say, trust no one. So
you can't trust anything you hear anymore. But we're happy that you're listening to this show. Google's Jump System, its cloud production suite for stitching together stereoscopic 360-degree videos, is getting a hardware upgrade. Google showed off the new Yi Halo VR camera rig at NAB that is built with 16 Yi technology action cameras. Yi Technology is a Chinese technology company, mounted spherically on the base, as well as an additional upward facing camera to catch whatever's happening above the camera. The Yi Halo includes an LCD screen on the device for managing the battery and onboard sensors, as well as other controls. And the camera rig will release this summer for a mere $17,000.
But they will give 100 filmmakers free access to the Jump camera in the Jump Start program. So you can apply for that. So you get free access to the Jump. Only 100 of you.
Yeah.
We should enter.
Oh, yeah, we should totally, because we just put it right here and then people would be sitting on this table, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this was 2 years ago Google first showed off their initial ideas. They did that at Google I.O. On stage. I fully remember that. GoPro Odyssey is what that ended up being. And it was kind of like a spherical base, actually very similar to this, with 16, I think it was, GoPro cameras mounted around it. Then it cost $15,000, took more than a year to come to market. I think they said they sold maybe slightly more than 100 in total since then. So I don't know. It just kind of reminds me of Google's kind of approach with hardware sometimes, you know, making these big things and then nobody jumps on board. But maybe it's because it's a, you know, it's a higher, I don't know, there's such a higher buy-in for something like this. Like, how many people are creating 360-degree immersive video movies?
Mm-hmm.
Can't think of many.
I just got this thing. It's $250. It's the Gyroptic. And
it's almost just as good.
It's probably just as good,
yeah,
I would say. And once I figure out, John was telling me that you don't have to move the camera around when you're doing
it. Keep it still.
Because I always want to catch everything and then give anyone like nausea who tries to watch the video.
Because then if you've got your goggles on, everything's moving in front of you. Yeah, you feel like you're going to fall down.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it mounted. That's rule number one.
Right. But this
is
actually,
cool.
It's $250. It fits into the Lightning port because iPhones haven't had a lot of, you know, these types of things. And it's fun.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Excellent.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations to astronaut Peggy Whitson, who has set a new NASA record as of 1:27 a.m. Eastern. Monday, Whitson has spent 334 days in space. She's currently living at the International Space Station, where she was greeted by phone this morning by President Donald Trump, his daughter Ivanka, and NASA astronaut Kate Rubins. According to CNN, Whitson is the first woman to command the space station, and she's commanded it twice. Among other questions, Trump asked Whitson for a timeline to getting to Mars, and she gave a timeline of the 2030s. So,
She was a little conservative on that because I think he followed up by saying he really wants them to push it up so that it can be in his first term, maybe second term.
Maybe it'll be in his third term.
A little ambitious.
Could be in his third term.
You never know. Little ambitious, but hey, anything that's going to get us to Mars faster, I'm all for it. This is awesome. Apparently, she returns in September. She will have been up there almost a full year by the time she gets back.
Mm-hmm.
That's craziness. And meanwhile, I've never been to space. It's not fair.
Well, you should go.
Okay.
Let's do it. I watched the call, and you get to eat, drink coffee in a blob.
Oh, that sounds delightful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is what we need to figure out. We need to figure out how we can get all the TNT crew and all of us go to space and do an episode of TNT from the space station.
And
I think Burke agrees. I don't know if we have Burke Cam, but I'm happy to see Burke's thumb today. Hi, Burke.
Would it be possible for all of us to also be sitting in those Star Trek chairs, like with the big wide arms?
I think it has to be. I think that's how it has to
and
be.
And I will sit in the captain's chair.
Obviously. apparently, I'm on the product beat today, or at least the NAB beat. DJI launched its new first-person video goggles that they call, well, goggles. They look very nice product name. They look strikingly similar to any number of traditional VR goggles on the market today. Goggles are, of course, meant to work in tandem with DJI's drones. That's to allow the pilot to get first-person video streamed back while they're flying their aircrafts in real time. And goggles will begin shipping on May 20th for $499. I think this is really cool. I would love to fly a drone. Well, A, I would love to be good at flying a drone because I'm not. Mm-hmm. But B, I would love to fly a drone and get first-person video back to my eyeballs. Brian, I'm gonna bring you in again.
Yeah.
Have you ever done this?
I've done FPV drone flying, but usually to get the the frame rate more without latency, you have to do analog, so it's not HD, and it kind of cuts in and out. Really fun to do, and there are other headsets on the market that will track your head movement and do specific things, like either move the camera or the drone, but this is pretty neat if you're a DJI owner and you want, like, HD video to look at.
It looks fun.
Can you move the camera? You move the camera and the drone with your head?
Sounds like it's the camera, but
you can do both. Actually, they have different modes, so you can have it so that you can tilt your head left and right, and that controls the direction that the drone is flying. You can also do a different method that controls the gimbal in 360 degrees of movement,
but not both at once. That's like patting your head and moving your stomach at once.
That might be kind of difficult
if you want to crash, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You'll see exactly where you're crashing if you do both at once. Very cool, though. Apparently, the resolution beats the screen that's found in the Oculus Rift, 1280 by 1440. It has something called OcuSync technology that basically allows for it to throttle the streaming quality depending on where the drone is. So if you're really far away, it would be streaming at 720p. If you're close, it would be streaming at 1080p, and it would kind of dynamically switch between those.
I like it.
So you're going to get one.
Totally.
Is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. That's
Brian's going to buy it for me.
Yeah.
Excellent.
He owes me.
I do, after the raccoon incident. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're referencing?
Yeah.
As soon as I have like $1,600 for a drone and goggles, I'll do it, guys.
Excellent. Okay. All right, we'll hold you to that. Up next, somebody was caught in bed with Uber, and the fallout isn't pretty. But first, let's take a minute to thank Box. They are the sponsor of this episode. Box provides a single place to edit, comment, share, and approve the files that you have from any device, so you can simplify your workflow and make things easier for you. You're always going to have the latest version on hand. That makes it super easy to collaborate with your team. You can preview full documents in more than 120 file types, including PDF and PSD, without downloading. You'll also receive real-time notifications when edits are made, and Box will save earlier versions just in case you need to go back. That's a super handy feature. You can use the Box app to stay productive where you are. Save files, of course, for offline access. If you know you're going to need that offline, you're not going to have connectivity, you just save it and you get instant access to that. You can also instantly send photos or videos from your iPhone or iPad directly to Box with Box Capture. Keep your desktop, web, and mobile content synced with Box Sync, so your files follow you everywhere that you happen to be. Thousands of integrated apps, of course, like DocuSign, Google Docs, and Salesforce. And with Box.com, there's no need to send email attachments. You can securely share large files with team members, customers, or external agencies using a simple link, a custom URL. That's all you need. Control permissions, set expiration dates, and secure files with password protection. That'll keep you safe and secure. And you can remotely log out a user and delete Box data on any lost or stolen device. Meet your organization's content governance with and compliance standards with Box. FedRAMP, FIPS, FINRA, and HIPAA compliant, and a whole lot more. Also saving data residency requirements with data storage in Europe, Asia, and Australia. Use Box Platform to create apps that improve customer experiences and streamline business processes. Box offers individual, business, and enterprise plans, so no matter what your scenario is, you can find the right plan for you. More than 41 million users and 59,000 businesses, including 60% of the Fortune 500, trust Box to manage content in the cloud. So stop relying on IT to build workflow. Box empowers users to take ownership of their work and get involved with their work. So you can transform the way that your business collaborates and work as one with Box.com. Check it out for yourself. Visit Box.com for a free 2-week trial. That's Box.com, and we thank Box for their support.
Over the weekend, Mike Isaac from the New York Times published a piece on Uber's CEO, Travis Kalanick. Isaac recounts several stories about the CEO, including an in-person meeting with Tim Cook, where the Apple CEO threatened to remove Uber from the App Store for identifying and tagging iPhones. It was a great read with many buried tidbits, including the fact that a service called Unroll.me that I have recommended in the past sold users' information to Uber. Here to talk about this is Ian Thompson from The Register. Welcome back to the show, Ian.
Always a pleasure, Megan. Always a pleasure.
So let's start by talking a little bit about what Unroll.me does.
Okay, well, this was, it's actually a service which several of the journos here in the office have been using, not admittedly after today's story, but the idea behind the service was to cut down the amount of extraneous data that you were giving out to third parties. It would basically crawl through your webmail account and determine what things, what services and newsletters and things you were subscribed to, and then give you the option of either deleting those if you didn't want them, shifting them to a special folder if you did, and generally improving the privacy and functionality of your email account, which is what makes today's little kerfuffle quite so amusing and in a very dark sort of way.
So they were crawling through our email accounts. This was actually written in their privacy policy. This was something if we spent the time reading, we would have seen that they do this. They would have to monetize. But it's ironic because, like you said, they're a service that's designed to sort of cut down on spam, and they were selling their information to Uber. What exactly did Uber want from our email accounts?
Well, what Uber wanted was a list of roughly how many Lyft receipts they were seeing in people's email accounts. Now, this data was anonymized, so they weren't actually saying, Timothy Perkins of such and such a town used Lyft 3 or 4 times this week. They were taking anonymized bunches of data and saying, right, well, within this survey group, these people had Lyft accounts and Lyft ride receipts. So this was being used by Uber as a way of gauging how many people were using Lyft in a particular geographical area or in a particular vertical sector. And that way they could gauge how well they were doing against the competition. So the fact that they were actually, this is a relatively new service that the Unroll.me have been offering. I think it's about since 2014 that they began selling this stuff off. And yes, it was in the terms and conditions and the privacy policy. But I've been through that, and there's over 5,000 words in there. And given the standard level of reading comprehension and the effect, the amount of legalese that is used to camouflage exactly what this means, I think, to be quite frank, to turn around and blame the users for not reading the T's and C's and privacy policy, as the CEO did today, is well, I would say insulting. Other people would say insensitive, maybe, or something even slightly more diplomatic. But bloody insulting is my take on it.
Yeah, I mean, the CEO of Unroll.me, you know, of course, apologized. They said that they need to do better, which makes me wonder, okay, well, need to do better what? Coming up with your business plan, because, you know, you had chosen, well, yeah, there it is. The title of their post is We Can Do Better. That was their chosen, that's their profit model, right? Like, that's how they make money off of their users. If something is free, you're the product. That's something we hear time and time again. Should we be surprised to find out things like this at this point? I feel like it's just kind of part and parcel for how free services operate. It's, you know, they do it until they get caught, and then maybe there's a change, maybe there isn't.
Well, yeah, I think what was particularly galling about this, though, was that he wasn't actually apologizing for selling people's data off without giving them adequate warning. He was apologizing for getting caught doing it. Mm-hmm. And in the terms of great tech non-apologies, that certainly ranks in the top five that I can think of the last few years. I mean, it's yes, on one level, as you're right, you are the customer if the product is free. But the very point of this service was supposed to be reducing the amount of people that had access to your email and your email data. And then to turn around, sell that information off to someone else, and then issue this like, oh, we're really sorry we got caught. We'll try and make it clearer that we're what we're doing next time. I mean, I'm willing to bet if you went to a representative sample of people who'd subscribed to this service, then none of them had an idea that this was going on. And in terms of, well, you should have read the terms and conditions, some fascinating research a couple of years ago out of Scandinavia, where they worked out if you actually read the terms and conditions of every service and app that somebody uses over a year, it would take you 72 years to do so. So, you know, this whole, well, you should have read the terms and conditions thing, that's honestly just bollocks. There's no way that you can do it in the real world. And customers as companies have got to get a lot clearer about what exactly they're doing with this data, where they're making their money. But also consumers have got to get a lot sharper about thinking when you access a service, what actually are you giving up in exchange for using it? So a little bit of blame on both sides, but I think honestly the company should have done an awful lot clearer job of doing this. I mean, when you're advertising on your website, this is a free service, and putting no further details in there, it all looks a bit shabby, to be honest.
I mean, to be fair, in his blog post, he wasn't necessarily blaming the user, just saying, he said, sure, we have a team terms of agreement, and, you know, we know that most people don't take the time to read it. So what they were saying was what they were going to do better was put it up higher, you know, maybe like in a FAQ on their page or something like that. I think what was so upsetting to people was, first of all, that, you know, it was ironic that what the service was designed to do versus what they were doing to monetize. But also his apology, he said it was heartbreaking to see that some of our users were upset to learn about how we monetize our free service. So I think it was just the language that was used. It was a little bit patronizing.
I'm sorry you were offended.
Yeah, and we're heartbroken. Like, really, are you heartbroken?
Yeah,
it's on a par with greeting Abraham Lincoln's wife with, you know, apart from that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you enjoy the play? You know, I mean, it's just the use of the term heartbreaking really was taking the piss. I mean, how could he possibly? Is he honestly expecting us to think that he read this report and went, damn, I'm heartbroken by this, as opposed to picking up the PR person's phone number and going, sort this now, otherwise you've got a real problem. Give me something to say that sounds good. And it just, it was...
Otherwise you'll be just heartbroken.
Yes,
like,
well...
Wait a minute.
Yeah. Otherwise, yes, you know, there's the door, use it. You know, it right. just... The and this is a perennial problem with Silicon Valley, is that, you know, we get all these heartfelt, beautifully crafted statements, which, you know, they're supposed to indicate, oh, we're so torn up over this, and you know deep down they couldn't honestly give a monkeys about this. It's just about bad publicity, and they're worried about losing and worried about losing users in the same way that so many other companies, including their customer Uber, has been in the past. So I think a little less, you know, bleeding heart, oh, we're so sorry, and a little more, okay, we should have made this clear in the first time. We apologize if anyone's upset, but it's not a massive deal at the end of the day. I'd have a lot more respect for a statement like that rather than we were heartbroken.
Well, I mean, so the Slice Intelligence is the parent company of Unroll.me. I guess they bought them. And they're a data company. And, I mean, so much of the world is moving through data right now. I mean, so much. I mean, every person, we collect data. I mean, we want to know how many people are watching. We want to, make better choices about what, our content is and where we distribute it. It's anonymous. But I mean, what can you say at this point? Like, shouldn't we just all get used to it that we are data, essentially?
Yes, I mean, it is an increasing issue for, for any business sector, including ours as well. I mean, we need to know how many people are reading particular articles and when they're reading them and how they're interacting with them, that sort of thing, so that we can actually fund the publication through advertising. But at the same time, I don't think we should just roll over on this one. I mean, over the next, we're already sort of 5 years into this, but over the next 10 years, 15 years, we're going to have to build some ground rules in the industry for how this is done. And at the moment, it seems to be the way that Silicon Valley and other tech firms seem to be dealing with this is grab what you can, grab everything you can. It may be useful later. And hey, if we can get a revenue stream from selling it to third parties, so much the better. And I think companies need to take a lot more nuanced approach to this. They need to, A, make customers much more aware of what data they're handing over, make it much, much clearer, not just sticking a few paragraphs of boilerplate at the bottom of a 5,000-word document. And we also need to. There also needs to be some quid pro quo here, because, Facebook or Gmail, you can understand that you pay a certain amount of data to use those products. What's more concerning is at the moment there seems to be a whole scale data grab, as we've seen with the Republican Party managing to pass this ridiculous law to scam to sell off everybody's internet histories. And this is a losing battle at the moment. And until people actually stand up and say this is not what I want, and vote with their feet, then we're not going to get the issue sorted because, at the end of the day, business is business and business is there to make money.
So there's a brewing, breaking story about Webroot that I think you're working on. Is there anything you can tell us about that?
Yeah, we're just putting the Webroot story up now. It has been a phenomenally bad day for Webroot. Basically, at the start, I think it kicked off about 3 p.m. Mountain Time. Webroot started identifying an awful lot of legitimate files on Windows 10 as Trojans and started removing and deleting them. Now, this has caused two major problems. Firstly, if you're running a Windows system and you're running Webroot, then you are a wee bit shafted on this one. But Webroot also has a really big reseller community who provide managed services for an awful lot of companies. And if you read the social media feeds coming from those companies at the moment, it's an absolute disaster for them. Because all the people who pay them money to manage their security are now questioning should they really be paying money to have Windows 10 completely mucked up on their system. And you've got thousands upon thousands of workstations which are essentially unusable at the moment. Now, the company has been back to us fairly quickly. They said they're working on a solution. But you've got to ask yourself, this is not the first time this has happened for Webroot. They had something similar happen in February. But what kind of testing procedures were they running on before they rolled out the upgrade or the update which presumably caused this? We have asked them if there was a recent update which could have caused this, and we haven't received an answer on that one. But quite frankly, at the moment, if you're using Webroot, you'll be better to disable it and use a bog-standard security suite just for the moment. Because, as I say, at the moment, there are Windows 10 machines going down all over the world.
Well, Ian, thank you so much. You can read Ian's story at theregister.co.uk, and you can find Ian also on Twitter at Ian Thompson. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Ian.
It was a pleasure. Have a great show.
Take care.
All right, we got some feedback of the voicemail variety about your story on Facebook VR. Well, I guess I was here for that part too earlier in the week from last week. He's got some suggestions for hardware makers out there, so listen up.
Yes, hello. I'm a 52-year-old male. I was listening to your thing on the Facebook and the VR. I just want to say very quickly, VR is awesome. Kind of interested in it. I wear glasses. Got two ideas. One, this is 2017. I should be able to punch my prescription into the console before I put them on. I pay a little more for that. Even better, how about this? They make the VR goggles with a slot at the end so I can drop a pre-made lens with my prescription in
and play without wearing goggles. Thanks. Have a great day. Bye.
Mm.
What do you think about that?
I like the idea of punching in your prescription when you set up your goggles and just having it work. I wonder how technically feasible that is. That's a really cool concept. I'd never thought of that before. And then, okay, so then the second one is that he should be able to put the lens into the glasses he already has and not have to wear goggles, or is it the other way around? That he should be able to put lenses into the goggles.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's cool, too. Yeah. I'm down for both of those suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
Do you wear glasses? My friend Mark?
No, I don't wear I don't wear glasses. I'm superhuman when it comes to eyes.
Lucky.
our friend Mark Zuckerberg, if you're watching right now, you heard mm-hmm. it. Go ahead and do that.
Make $1 million.
Yeah,
that'll make you a millionaire.
Yeah.
Mark Zuckerberg.
You could be rich.
You
Mark
could be
Zuckerberg.
Rich. You just listen to us.
TNT's fan of the day is Luke Vandervoort on Twitter, who says this is how he listens to TNT via his iPhone plugged into his Ford system.
Luke, you are not alone.
Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Record a video, take a picture of yourself or your setup, post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. You can use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT. And just for you today, I'm going to tell you a secret. You can also email it to Megan at twit.tv or TNT at twit.tv. Either one, if you don't want to post it on social media, it's okay.
It's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
We get them that way from mm-hmm. time to time, mm-hmm. and they make it in as well. Mm-hmm. We don't judge. When I envision flying cars, I'm not so sure I envision them in the same mental space occupied by things like jet skis, but that's where we're at, apparently. Kitty Hawk is a company that's backed by Google's Larry Page, and today we caught a glimpse of what this flavor of flying car can bring to the ridiculously or at least modestly wealthy. A hovering car dune buggy thingy that can fly over water. They published a promo video to show off the awesomeness. That's what we're looking at right now. That would be really fun, but it's not. I don't know what I was envisioning with flying car. This looks more like a fun thing to rent at the sports rental place at the lake.
Right.
Maybe that's just because the promo video is at a lake.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's safer to fly over water, apparently.
Uh huh. You don't die if it crashes.
I guess
immediately,
not, yeah.
Anyways.
So yeah, okay. Yeah, it does seem in the like you're on vacation and your kids are like, I want to do that. Like it might as well be tied to the boat.
Yeah,
I'm like meh.
No,
meh.
You don't
that
care
flying car. Nope.
This one, but you like flying cars, but not this one.
Yes, I want an autonomous flying car that looks a little, you know, like Star Wars. Like the drone racing
yeah.
in Star Wars.
No, I want that too.
Yeah.
I want it all.
Okay. You want this and that?
Well, I think this is cool. I didn't think of flying cars as like a recreational sport sort of thing.
Yeah.
But now that I see it, the more I see it, the more I'm like, oh, I'd totally ride that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just have to work on, you know, becoming a millionaire in order to do it because I'm sure it's really expensive. They didn't release the price. Apparently, there's no pilot's license required, so any Joe Schmo can do this. It's an ultralight classification aircraft, so it doesn't require a pilot's license, so be careful. You pay $100 now for a 3-year membership with priority placement on waitlist, also $2,000 discount on the retail price once it releases. But they didn't give you a price, but if there's a $2,000 discount on retail price, I have to imagine this thing's going to be kind of expensive.
Like $2,001?
Yeah, and so if you do it now, if you do this, then you'll get it for a dollar.
Right. I don't think I've ever, yeah, like I guess if I got like $2,000 off my house, that would be awesome. So yeah, it's probably, like I can't think of anything that it's like the discount is $2,000.
I guess we'll see. This is apparently a prototype. It's not the final design. It'll be different once it finally comes out. And yeah, we're starting to see more and more flying cars, right? Or Aeromobile mm-hmm. just last week had their pre-orders for their flying car that starts at $1.3 million. So this is an expensive genre.
Burke was going to say $22,000. That's what the Burke cam says.
Burke is placing his bets with $22,000. We'll hold you to it.
How much does a jet ski cost?
That's a really great question. Jet ski, I'm going to guess off the top of my head, $8,000. $8,000. Going once, going twice. Does jet ski as a search criteria work?
Buy
Let's see here.
A jet ski. $5,299.
You can find...
For the Sea-Doo watercraft.
Actually, yeah, they seem a lot less expensive than what I was thinking.
Okay.
Wave Runner. I'm seeing a bunch on like eBay for $700, $300. Really? They're this inexpensive? What is that one? Oh, okay. There we go. Brian's got it. Jet Ski Ultra 310 LX MSRP of $17,999.
But you get 500 in savings, so it all works out.
So if that's 500 in savings, and here you're getting 2,000 in savings, then what are we talking, like $30,000, $40,000 for the flying aircraft? Something like that?
Worth it? $100,000.
You think that much?
The Burke cam has adjusted his figure slightly.
Burke added a one to the beginning to make it $122,000, and that might just be close to what it ends up being. We'll see. And if any of you ever get to ride on one, please take a picture or a video and send it to us, and we'll put you on the show.
How I watch TNT in my flying car.
That would be fantastic. That might be the best one ever. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. Be part of the show, of course, by emailing us your pictures on flying cars at tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW, like we had today. I love the voicemails. And you can hit us up on Twitter. We're at Tech News Today TV.
And join us on our subreddit. That's technewstoday.reddit.com. I checked it out today. There were several good stories, many of which that we included today. So you can also subscribe to the show so you are first to get it. twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, I am at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to our technical director and today's editor. That's right. Our celebrity editor of the day is Brian Burnett.
You're welcome.
Thanks for that. Thanks to Burke, of course, for helping out in the studio and occasional thumbs ups. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. You didn't quite get that thumb in there. It's okay. We got it earlier. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.
I'll edit it in.